Okay. Anyway, so I want to do something which I happen to remember that we touched on this topic earlier, for sure last year, and probably even this year. But being that it's in the Fidush Aleph, and it's from a little different angle. So you'll excuse me. It's a different angle from, I think, the way we discussed it. But it might overlap a little bit. Okay, there's a shmooze there in the Chidush Aleif. I like the shmooze very much about, I don't remember, over 30 years ago. I just went to Israel. I came back. I was in Chicago. There was a principal of the elementary school in Chicago. His name was Rabbi Naftali Kalter at that time. He was in Chicago before he went to Milwaukee, and before he went to Boca, Anyway, so he asked me to come speak, and I said over this schmooze. What is that? So obviously I must have liked it. It says here that Shevet Levi were Nosnu Nafshem Al Kiddush Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shem Nisbat HaTayra. How do we know? Shebeshor Shai Mitzrayim, Shrobe Mitzrayim, Mosu B'Tayra Mamila. They were Mosu B'Tayra Mamila. We didn't get stopped getting bris mila. Well, Yakudam of the Avodah Zarah. Not only that, they all Klai Yisrael were worshiping Avodah Zarah. Avos Shifto Shalevi Kudos Hadikim Hayu Vayis Nitzar. But they kept the Torah. So that's the thing. That's how we know that Masru Nafshim. Okay. So the Shiva asks a very obvious question. That okay, it definitely proves that Shevet Levi were very big tzaddikim. Everybody else is doing terrible averes. No one else is doing mitzvahs. And Shevet Levi is keeping the mitzvahs. But where, what have they to do with Maestro Nafshan? That Medrash Tanhuma was discussing the concept of Mesiris Nefesh. That was in the topic there. And it's saying that Shevet Levi also, Nosnu Nafshan, they gave their lives. Right? That's giving their lives. That's our Sigya, Vidrushu Zayin Ishari. That's giving your life. What does that have to do with what Shevet Levi did? That was Rashiva's kasha. So Rashiva said a very beautiful yesod that ein achinami. Shevet Levi did not give their lives. There was no pikuach, there was no danger. No one was telling him not to do it. But what were people doing when Shevet Levi did the mitzvahs? They were laughing at them. Because basically, if no one else does it, so you're old-fashioned, backwards, primitive. So he says, if you skip down, where does he's got four lines in the next paragraph. It's three chanan and omar. Shah medrash hesek game ya ubna zu atma. The medrash proved that they gave their life. Shah benedro sadiqim ba'aiso tkufa shah sharit yo mos betaira. Mizeh levag bar yesh lochiyak shah emuchanim gam leharek. Because he says, if we keep down another few lines, it starts good. Kedei lamo b'muo hametach, to stand up against the pressure, hanoira, shalachas hachevra, of the pressure of society, shemos habetayra, veikumos havarazar, hoyezchukim b'nei shevei gvuratz, when they need tremendous strength, umosher shegvurazu, how much strength, shira chazal, she'oiso shira nitzrach l'mesiris nefesh. In other words, in order for a person to be Meiser Nefesh, it takes a certain extreme conviction, power, overcoming a difficult Nisayan, right? Giving your life. So, Oshiva is learning that to be publicly a tzaddik when everybody else, or almost everybody else, is Rishayim, and not care that they're laughing at you, and just, I'm doing what I believe is right, and I'm not letting myself be affected by them. I'm not letting them be mashpia on me. I'm not letting them pervert my dais. I'm not embarrassed from them. That takes a gvura, the same gvura of Mesiris Nefesh. Right? That was Mashiach's word. It's a very beautiful word.
We assume that they're getting laughed at?
He says, by definition, if everybody else is mosu b'tayra, they think Tyra is backwards. They think Tyra is silly. So they look down on you when you keep the Torah. You're a fool. You're backwards. You're primitive. I don't know if they were laughed, but that's the same. They don't. So there's a certain, it doesn't have to be laughed at. It's a pressure of society. She said, to go against society is such a difficult thing. It's one of the most hardest nisyonos. It's probably the, we're saying the hardest nisyonos. It's the same difficulty as giving your life on Kiddush Hashem. To go against the pressure of society. That was Meshiva's voice. That when society all feels a certain way and you go differently, you know, that was like Avram Avinu, it was against the whole world. That is already the equivalent of Meiser Nefesh. Because you don't have to be Meiser Nefesh. You're standing up. That takes the same difficulty, the same strength. Okay. Since I just couldn't only have the Yeshiva Shmuz, so I added here my own Shmuz, which I don't want to get back because it's not Shmuz time, but I thought this could be the same voice. It says in the beginning of B'Shawach, Vayikach Moshe es Atzmas Yosef. Moshe zochal be'atzmas Yosef v'en Yisrael godei menu shenemar v'yikach Moshe es Atzmas Yosef Torah banan ru'u go and see kama chavivas mitzvahs on Moshe Rabbeinu. Go see how much Moshe Rabbeinu loves mitzvahs. Let's see how much Moshe Rabbeinu loves mitzvahs. Shekol Yisrael is asking b'biza because all Yisrael when they were leaving Mitzrayim they were busy collecting the money. Behum is Isaac ben mitzvahs, and he was involved in mitzvahs. Shenem baracham leiv yikach mitzvahs, which is a separate topic on its own. But okay, right, that's not for now. But what? So my kasha was: you want to bo urei kama chavivis mitzvahs on Moshe? You want to know how much? I mean, this is it. This is it. I mean, Mistama, there are a million riots. How much Moshe Rabbeinu, how much Moshe was dedicated for mitzvahs? How much Moshe loved mitzvahs? Well, he went to the Har Sinai, and he was there 40 days, and he didn't eat. I mean, you know, it must be so many things that Moshe Rabbeinu was Meiser Nefesh. You know, Mamish, he gave his life. How much Moshe Nefesh? Then he did Atzmas Yosef. Big deal. Doesn't even say that Atzmas Yosef was so difficult. Right? It doesn't say, you know, I had to find it. So, okay, he went ahead, he figured out how to find Atzmas Yosef. Doesn't seem it was like the most difficult mitzvah. I'm sure there were other mitzvahs that Moshe did that were 100,000 times more difficult. So, this is like, Bo Urei Kama Chavivis Moshe, Mitzvah Moshe. Let's see how much Moshe loved mitzvahs. Like, this is your best example. This is the maximum. The best example of Moshe loving mitzvahs is this case. I don't think I would have assumed that. If I would ask you, tell me in Moshe Rabbeinu's 120 years, where did he demonstrate the most love for mitzvahs? I don't think too many people would have said Atzmas Yosef. I don't think so. So what I think Pshat is, that it does demonstrate it. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is part of society, and all Klai Yisrael are going to the Biza. And that puts a certain psychological pressure. It's not that it makes that Moshe is afraid of being laughed at. It makes a person feels pressure that society is right. If everyone's going to the Biza, they probably, that's what you're supposed to be doing. Everyone, the world's not crazy. No, it is crazy, but that's the feeling. Everyone's running to the Biza, so you automatically are inclined. There's a tremendous psychological pressure or a psychological pull to be like everyone else. So for Moshe Rabbeinu to go against everyone else, that's what he says. Moshe Shekol Yisrael, everyone's doing something else. Everyone's going to the right, and he's going to the left. Wow. That shows Chavivis HaMitzvah. That you can do different than everyone else. Okay, anyway. So the word that we have, that's the intellectual part of the Musar V'at. Now we get to the that going against the Rabbim is extremely, extremely difficult. It's not just because you're afraid you're going to be laughed at. It's more than that. It's that the Rabbim, without you realizing it, are mashpi on you. you automatically feel that the Rabbim is right. Right? I give always the example. They go ahead and the styles. They go ahead and then and now I don't know what they're up to anymore because I lose track. Glasses are big or little now? They're big. They're big. So after they have big glasses, so the guy would have small glasses. Ooh, what's wrong with you? Right? Then you get small. You get big glasses, and then a few years later, small glasses. Right? Ooh, they look ugly. And you yourself. You know, I bought this suit, and I really thought it was beautiful. And then years later. Ooh, yuck. I bought this tie, and it's fat. I have to throw out all my ties, because my ties are too fat. No, they're fat. They're going back in? Oh, boys, I'm in luck. I haven't thrown them out yet. Right? The ties, I thought they're getting skinnier. No, they're getting fatter again? Oh. No, this is middle, no? Yeah, but my old ties are much wider. And the other ties are much skinnier. But the same guy, it's not just that you do it because that's what everyone else does. You look in the mirror and you say, ooh, that's ugly. Right? You know, I was recently at a bar mitzvah and they were serving sushi and those kids, I'm telling you, I never seen kids grabbing so much. They were going crazy. Now, when I was a kid, kids grabbed for cake. They weren't grabbing the cake. They were grabbing the sushi. I don't know. Maybe sushi really tastes good. But I suspect that it's not just that sushi tastes good. It's a fad. You know, there's like, I don't know if you people remember get Cabbage Patch Dolls. That was before your time. What? Yes. Cabbage Patch Doll? No. Right. There was a thing and that people were lining up before the stores would open. If they heard that they got a delivery of these dolls, people would line up for hours before to like on Black Friday, you know, to get in so they could, because there's a tremendous shortage. Everyone had to have a Cabbage Patch Doll. It was some kind of doll that didn't look like was instead of a face of a human was like a funny face. I don't know. So, you know, and that became the fad. And everyone had to have it. And in some company, and it became like they were selling like millions until people just stopped being the fad. And that was the end of it. Right? There are these crazy fads that can take over the world. So it's, you get caught up in a fad and everyone else is doing it and you think, you know, you think I believe it too, but you don't really believe it. You're just, I mean, you do believe it, but you believe it because you're carried away by everyone else. Moshe Rabbeinu was susceptible of being carried away. Everyone's running to the Biza, so you run also, right? Everyone else is running. So.
You should do it in a certain sense.
No, okay. We're trying to say in a certain sense you shouldn't do it. The potential you should do it, okay, we'll worry about it. Okay, anyway, so what's the ramifications? I want to get to the Lamaisa. The Lamaisa, okay, don't worry. I'm not telling you to walk around like to dress like an African, like the way they dressed 500 years ago, because you have to be, right? I'm not, right. In a certain sense, you can't be totally outside society. I'm not worried that anyone in this yeshiva is going to start dressing like a chassid from 500 years ago, right? Okay. Anyway, but what's a lemaisa? So there's a few lemaisas. The first most practical lemaisa is that we have to be aware of this tremendous yetzara. See, most people are bawi gaivas, and they think, what? I should be mushba just because everyone else is doing something. I have my own brain, right? I'm a very thinking person, and I decide myself what's right, and I don't get carried away. Just because everyone else is saying, doing something, that doesn't affect me, right? That's a normal person's gaiva. But it's not true. If my shmuz is right, even Moshe Rabbeinu was highly susceptible of being carried away by the crowd. There's a certain, no matter how big of an intellectual you are, that's human nature. You're affected by the crowd mentality. So that's a major, people don't admit to themselves that because it's their gaiva. So what's a nafka mina? Nafka mina is, first thing is, keep away from a bad crowd. Right? You know, because you have to realize that if you're going to be, or even a bad friend, if you're going to be together with a person or with a crowd, for sure, who is doing things that really that you shouldn't be doing, it's very likely, not that you're going to feel, but first of all, you might feel pressured, even though you don't want to do it, because you don't want to be laughed at. And second of all, you might even be worse, you'll psychologically begin to accept what they're saying, because there's a certain psychological thing that whatever the rabbim says, they're right. Right? I'm pretty sure I told the guys this even very recently, so repeating, I'm sorry, that I had a first cousin who's older than me, who had a very from yeshiva bacher, who lived and grew up in Borough Park. It was my mother's. And my mother always said, I don't know, he was older than me, so I didn't really have to know him that well. My mother always said that he was a tremendous, you know, a masmid, a yeshiva guy, doing great. I don't know if that's true or not. I can't vouch for it. And in his summer, he decided his parents couldn't afford to send him to camp. So he went ahead and he got a job working in a hotel, in some hotel in the mountains. His parents were so happy. He gets to go to the mountains for the summer. And he came back, and that was the end of him. He basically, I've been picking on Los Angeles too much the last day or two. But he went off, he ran away to Los Angeles. That's what happened. That was, in those days, when you wanted to rebel, that's what you did. You know, because Los Angeles was like the furthest place away from New York.
Now you can't do that.
What?
You can't do that now.
Why not?
Jews.
Okay. In those days, that was like when if the Jews were in New York, most of the Jews, and the furthest way you could get away from everything was Los Angeles. So that's what he did. A single guy, he picked up, he stopped keeping kosher, kept keeping Shabbat, whatever, as far as, in words, no one knew what he did. And he just picked up and disappeared.
Months.
What?
Just 2 months.
Now, of course, maybe you'll tell me my mother was wrong. Really, she was something already. Okay, it could be. I don't know. But that's what she used to always say. But pshat is, it could be. He was in a chevra of certain people in camp. You know, not camp. In the hotel. I don't know what the other waiters were like. So, you know, that my aunt was very silly. Not silly. I don't want to say not pshat, but she didn't, unaware. She didn't know. You can't send your kid to a hotel. You don't know who the other waiters are. You know, he'll be a waiter. He's a good kid. You should go out. But he's together for 2 months with other waiters and other. There's a scene in the hotel, and I don't know. You know, and what he's going to be the only going to be. You know, they get pulled in. That's what happens. So the first thing a guy has to realize is don't be such a balgaiva. I think that's the first insight. Don't keep away from trouble. And the same thing is certain friends. As much as, you know, I don't like to make people lose some of their friends. Maybe I don't mind. But certain friends are poison. Say, I can be his friend and he won't affect me. No, he will affect you. That's how it is. And you're around certain people, they affect you. And it could even be friends in yeshiva. Obviously not here, of course. Of course not here. But, you know, it could, anyway, could even be in Queens, right? Even in Queens. And not everybody's holding in the same place.
That's why we came here.
That's right. Not everyone holds in the same place. You said it's not true anymore. But there used to be, when I was, years ago, there used to be a group of guys in Queens who were the cynics. Yeshiva is no good. Rabbi Harris is off the derech. I know, you know. the Yeshiva was so much warmer and this and that. Because they never knew the Yeshiva, so they could say whatever they want, you know. When in the Yeshiva's days, it was so much better. Today, so then, and you know, those guys are poison. Maybe they're not around anymore. But they got to know that there are the people are affected by the rabbim that you hang out with. That's human nature. Oh, the Russia, oh, the Shechino. That's the way it is. You hang around Kairach, you'll be like Kairach. It's just human nature. You can be a tremendous tzaddik, but if you're hanging around the wrong people, it's very, very bad for you. People think, I can hang around. You know, I won't. That's a certain gaiva. It means you have to make sure you marry the right wife, obviously, because obviously she's the one you hang around the most in your later years. You know, but it means not just your wife. It means at this point, who your friends are. Who do you hang out with? Who are you with? Because you're with people that have kruma hashkafas. So without realizing it, you get the same kruma hashkafas. And so it's like two things. One is you're afraid to be laughed at, so even if you don't have kruma hashkafas, you feel tremendously pressured to do what they say. Because they're going to laugh at me, they're going to look down on me. But even more than that, because my shmuz and Moshe was, it's that it's you're psychologically you're liable to buy into what they say without thinking, because you just automatically. Okay. So anyway, that's one. I'm losing time. Okay. The second thing is I forgot already, so I have to remember. The second thing is. There's one of the things that all the Bawi Musar talk about is you have to know the Yetzer Hara's tricks. Because when you know what the Yetzer Hara's tricks, first of all, you can sometimes avoid the Nisayin, that's what we said. But even if you can't avoid the Nisayin, if you understand it, then you can fight it. In other words, let's say you're stuck. You have to be in an environment where everybody else is going is anti-Torah, whatever, or anti what we believe, you know, what we believe to be authentic Torah. You know, you have to be in a much more modern society, and in that society, what counts is money, right? Everyone wants money. Everyone wants a car. Everyone wants this. So you have to realize that sometimes you can't leave society. It's not always possible. It's not always possible to separate yourself. This is your parents, this is your brother, your sister, your uncles, your aunts, you know, your neighborhood. But awareness that you're going to have that nisayin is also very important. Because when you dehear, when you're prepared, you know, when your nisyanis are much, much easier when you're prepared for it, right? I gave the guys a mushel. Erev Shabbos, you know, a guy's rushing, Erev Shabbos. And then he's rushing, and it's a minute before Shkia. Baruch Hashem, I made it. Hey, I forgot to turn off the light. Right? Turns off the light. I guess I didn't make it. right? Now, if he would stop to think, if he'd be thinking, of course he wouldn't turn off the light after Shkia. But you're not thinking. So if you tell the guy in advance, you know it's very likely that when a guy's rushing, he can turn off a light after Shkia. Oh, then he'll be careful. When you're aware of the nisyanis that come, then sometimes it's easy. The reason why people slip up is because they're taken by surprise. Taken by surprise, or when you're unaware, is the worst thing. So you should be aware. Let's say you're stuck. You can't like the expression is stop the world. I want to get off. Right? You can't get off of the world. This is the world you live in. The world you live in has certain hashkafas, and they are, and the home and everything, and you're constantly exposed to it. So at least realizing that there's a danger that this can be mashpia on me, and I have to really, now, I'm not saying don't accept this, if you really believe it, okay? But you have to stop to think, do I really believe this? In other words, I come, and comes, my favorite example, right? Favorite example. A guy says, I want to get drunk on Purim. So you have to ask yourself, do you really want to get drunk on Purim? or just because everybody else gets drunk on Purim? Okay, now I know I see someone smiling, and he knows the answer. Okay, do you really want to get drunk? Fine. But there are some people that I bet you, when they think about it, why in the world would I want to get drunk on Purim? Ooh, it's disgusting. I want to go around vomiting. And when you're drunk, you don't even remember anything after Purim. Why would I want to have a Purim that I don't even remember? I don't even remember what I did. Because I'd be so drunk that I missed the whole Purim. Why would I want to go around vomiting at everyone? But, you know, so it just said, well, that's what the Goyim do. Goyim get drunk. Goyim have parties. But so it just, you know, okay, maybe not. Maybe there is a type of getting drunk. I happen to know, too, obviously. But there are, I'm sure, some people that is just because that's what everybody else does. So it must be, it's the rave. It's like the Cabbage Patch Dolls. Everyone else is doing it, so it must be great. Right? It's the same thing with, you know, with a little bit with money. And I so much want to have a beautiful car, you know, a gorgeous car. You know, I dream of having I don't know how much a good, a fancy car costs anymore. Like $200,000, that kind of, right? So, you can say logically, like, what for? Like, what is so gavaldic about a, you know, the purpose of a car is to try to get you from point one, point to B. Like, you really, you know, that's not where you enjoy life when you're sitting in your car. I mean, I hope not, you know. You know, you want to have a nice, comfortable bed at home, okay, but you're not sleeping in the car, you're driving. So what, does it really make such a big difference if the seat is more comfortable or less comfortable? Like, you know, I don't know, is that worth $100,000? So, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. But I think sometimes it's the hype of society. Society builds something up. And then that's what everyone wants, so I want it too. But when you think about it logically, maybe it's really not so great. And it's just, so the awareness, I'm not saying every single time. Obviously, sometimes you really do want it. But sometimes, like I suspect, these kids were going crazy over the sushi because they know that the adults go crazy over sushi. So, you know, they were going crazy. They were just stuffing themselves. I don't think they were hungry anymore. I don't believe they could be so hungry. 50 pieces. You know, a kid. I don't know. Exaggeration a little bit, but okay, maybe not. There's sometimes, so the awareness that, like, we have to check ourselves. Maybe the reason why I have such a big taiva is not really because it's so good, right? If they were serving chocolate cake, okay, I understand why you have such a big taiva, but for sushi? Okay. Anyway, no one appreciates my humor. But there's sometimes we where our taivas are not real. They're not based on taiva. They're based on society. And by realizing it, we can deflate the taiva. Because that's really what we want to do. We want to ponder ourselves from that taiva. The taivas force us in doing things we don't want to do. So what we want to try and do is, if we could think of a trick to deflate some of our taivas, that would be gavaldic, because then we're not going to be pulled into doing things that we don't want to do. I don't want to act like a behemoth. I want to be a kaddish v'tor and a tzaddik. But what can I do? I have taivas. I can't control myself. Right? That's what a lot of us think. And it's, to some extent, maybe it is true, maybe not true. So if there's an eitzah of deflating our taivas, that would be so good. So an eitzah of deflating the taivas is to stop when you have a strong taiva and think about it. Why do I really want this? Is it because intrinsically it's so good, right? Or is it just because this is the latest fad and everybody else is doing it? So I'm just pulled by the fad, you know? You know, I have to stop to think. Is it? Am I doing this because it's really good, and there's really a taiva that's pulling it to me, or it's just because everyone else says it's good, so it must be good. You know, even in things that aren't, that are pure taivas, it's that way. And surely by things that aren't taivas. Okay, we have in the, you know, in even if those, anyone who knows a little history, and it's in the Gemara too, then the time of the Gemara, but even not so long ago, about 100 years ago, people who were, a little bit overweight was considered beautiful. People that were skinny were considered sickly. And it was disgusting. And no one would be attracted to a skinny woman. Yuchi, she's sick. Something wrong with her. You know? It's just something. So it, like you think that it's inborn. There must be something inborn. It's not inborn. Even that, it's a lot of the taiva with society. I said this last year that the Mefarshim say Eishes Yifas Toa. Not if sorry. Eishes Yifas Toa. Right. She has to grow her fingernails because growing your fingernails is disgusting. And yet today, it's considered stylish. And if you don't, the people, they paste fake long fingernails on their fingernails because they think it's beautiful. Right? But is it disgusting or is it beautiful? Okay, anyway, I don't get too big on that point. Okay, that's point number two. Point number three, which is, I think, what we did talk about more than anything else, but I think, is that we are big believers of Navardic, even though we didn't talk about Navardic this year. So Navardic held that because there's such a hard problem of social pressure, a person can work on that point in a vacuum. Meaning, this is a little bit, I don't say it's hard to explain, but it makes, in other words, the Gemara says in order to overcome social pressure, you have to be on the Madrega Mesiras Nefesh. So what if I'm not on the Madrega Mesiras Nefesh? So what am I supposed to do? So now I'm stuck. How am I supposed to withstand social pressure? So Navardik answered that by doing Chinuch HaMusar, Limud HaMusar, particularly just on the topic of this one topic, then you can learn to conquer it without having to be on the Madrega Mesiras Nefesh. Right? It makes sense. In other words, if you're not working on it special, so then you need the power of Mesiras Nefesh to overcome it. But if you spend, you learn Musar Seder on it, you do Chinuch HaMusar on it, you, whatever other things you do on it, then you can train yourself. You know, a person can train himself. You know, let's say, athletic. So if you want to be an all-around athlete, then you can just get up without practice and just be an amazing athlete. You have to be in very good physical shape and whatever. But if you just want to be a good athlete for ping pong, for handball, for one field, for tennis, then you can do that without having to be so this great all-round athlete. If you just focus on that one field. So there's the same thing. The Vardic said that being that this is the greatest problem, so and in order to overcome the problem, you have to be nice and nefesh, but we're not on the Madrega nice and nefesh. So they said, let's isolate it. Let's work just on this problem. And if you work just on this problem, it's like, I'm just going to work on ping pong. I'm just going to work on handball. So enoch and ami, it comes to other sports, I'll be terrible. But at least I work on handball, I'll be a good handball player. So I'm going to work on overcoming the nisayon of social pressure. So how did Navardik work to overcome that pressure? So I'm not advocating Navardik, because then I'll get in trouble. But Navardik did it mainly by chinuch hamusar, by practicing being different, right? Walking around with your clothes inside out and all kinds of interesting things that Navardikas did. So they got used to not caring what other people say. Regretfully, we can't do that. Reshiva would fire me. You know, he would probably come back from the cavern fire me if I advocated to do that. But certain things we can do. For example, let's say you're the only guy in the Beis Medrash and no one else is there learning. So you can be, you can be a Navardika and you learn, even though I'm the only guy in the Beis Medrash. It's good for you. It trains yourself to be different. Like I said, wearing your tzitzis out sometimes, davening in the airport. Listen, you got to daven in the airport. I'm not saying you should go out of your way to daven in the airport. But if you're stuck, you got to daven in the airport. So be happy. You know, but okay, now I get to practice my individuality. I told the guys that I was in Eretz Yisrael at a hesped for, there was a gadol from France, a very big gadol. I forgot his name because I forgot fifth people's names. Forgot, I'm sorry. So he was a yeshiva in France, and many, many yeshivas in France. He was a Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim. So they said that he used to bring into the yeshiva, also he was very big in Kiruv, and he used to encourage even non-from people to come to visit the yeshiva. And he would let them stay in the yeshiva for a week, 2 weeks, you know, because he wanted to mesh beyond them. And they would come with all their junk, with all their music and all their other things, and Goyshe music. And the guys in the yeshiva used to complain to the Rosh Yeshiva that, you know, they're ruining the atmosphere. And he used to say that it's now's your chance to learn how not to be mushpa from the society, because you're going to have to learn it anyway, so you might as well learn it now. Once you leave yeshiva, you're going to have to see Sayin 10 times harder, so get used to it. So at least you have to see a little bit in yeshiva. Now, I'm not saying that lechatchila we're going to bedafka bring in people with geisha music into the dormitory. But lo yitzor, it's there. It's a good opportunity, right? Now, that's what he's saying. I don't think he said lechatchila, that's why he brought them in. I don't think that's what he was saying. But he's saying, I brought them in because I want to do kiruv. It's not the end of the world. You have a nisayan, good. So learn how to handle a nisayan. Stretch your muscles a little bit. You know, don't look at everything as always a tragedy. It's an opportunity to practice in an easy environment, being different, you know, standing up to what you believe in. Okay, now I have to say something that's going to get me some people angry, so I shouldn't say it, but I'll say it anyway. You have to be careful in the other way. Just like we can practice chinuch hamusar in being ready to be different, we have to be careful we don't do chinuch hamusar in being the same. Right? That makes sense?
In other words...
No? In other words, if let's say society, Madison Avenue, comes out with some crazy suit, right? The newest style is this, I don't know, some crazy suit, right? I gotta be the first guy in yeshiva to get that suit. Because I have to be, you know, basically I have to follow. That sort of shows that you're allowing yourself to be caught up in the craze. There's a craze in the world. You know, there's a craze. This is the newest craze. So when you go ahead and jump on the craze too quickly, you're showing, if everyone else is really doing it, okay, you don't want to walk down the street and look like a fool. That I agree. But when the first craze starts, you know, you won't look like a fool if you're still wearing the suit from the last craze. So when you jump on the bandwagon, what you're doing is, you're doing chinuch hamusar to say that I am easily, you know, whatever they come out, is this is the greatest thing, I jump on board, I buy in. You're like, you know, you're almost demonstrating no backbone. I don't know, right? So you have to be a little reserved, a little, you know, self-control. It's like negative chinuch hamusar. When you allow yourself to be mushba by every crazy style, if all of a sudden the style is, you know, the style says Chicago, you know, now they have the styles to cut the payas, right? So they got such an shyness. I remember Rab Brook, the older, the father, further the year, Rab Brook, the son, when he was here, right? He told the guys that their payas are too short, right? Remember that. But the father, when we went to Rabbi Grumblatt with him, he said he was very upset with the guys. Those of them that they had long sideburns, guys. You know, he said all of a sudden the style is for 50 years. No, you stopped your pay is here. Now the style is long. You're going long sideburns. I'm like, what are you? Well, what do you know? You know, we have to follow the what are you find the Gushla styles for? No. And when it's on now, the style is short sideburns, no sideburns. So but he said, but I remember Brooke was upset with long. Like, what's wrong with long sideburns? It's great, you know, for sure. You see all the shittas of payas, because there are some payas shittas that payas go further down. But he was upset because you're just doing it because you're following the style. He said. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. In other words, don't have to be. Obviously, once everyone's doing it, you don't want to look like a fool. I don't want to walk out with a bow tie because, you know, I look like a fool if I'm still wearing a bow tie from the 1930s, you know. But if they first, you know, but if you're the you don't have to be, you don't have to like jump on the bandwagon so fast because you have to show that you understand that it's really Narishkeit. It really doesn't look so beautiful. It's just because they want to sell more suits, so they made up and decided a new style. But there's really, that style, a year ago, if you would have shown me that suit, I would have said it's ugly. So what happened now? It's still ugly. and it's just because they decided that it's beautiful. So am I such an idiot? Am I such a yo-yo? That because they said it's, so you, it's almost like, it's chinuch hamusa the other way. If you jump on board every little new thing, okay. Now that is there an avera? There's no avera. You want to do it, you can do it. But I think it's a chinuch hamusa. That's not good. Okay, I'm finished.